I'm Will Hedrick, and this is Dog Years and Timestamps, the book club podcast. We are, unfortunately, without Jordan. He's unable to make it this week. Might be unable to make it for the next couple of weeks. It's just really difficult with timing right now for everybody involved. Even with the week off, it wasn't enough for some of us. Barely enough for me. I've been reading for the past almost 3 hours, trying to make sure that I had finished this section. Life, you know, that's just what happens, I guess, sometimes. Hopefully the changes that we talked about last episode, once I'm able to implement them after we get through Dune, that being on a time constraint because of the movie, things will be a little bit more back to normal as far as the quality of the episodes and the number of people within them. I wouldn't expect too much out of this episode, just like the last one, as I have nobody to bounce these ideas off of, and I'm just going to be monologuing. And it really makes you think. It's impressive how people who talk for a living are able to do it so effectively. I don't know how Bill Burr does it. He just sits in a room and screams at a microphone twice a week, and it works. I listen to it twice a week. So, you know. In any case, what we're talking about today, 1 minute into my despair, is the first book of Dune, coincidentally entitled Dune. It's about 240-ish pages in my edition of the Kindle. What would you call it? It's a legendary series, is it not? I mean, everybody knows about it, at the very least has heard of it. Not everybody necessarily knows what it might be about, but everyone knows that it's a sort of sci-fi fantasy epic. Something that people talk about. You know, there was a movie that came out in, what was it, like the 60s or the 70s? I can't remember. And that was what, that was David Lynch. Let me look that up right quick. Oh, look at that. I was way the fuck off on time. It's 1984, but it was David Lynch that directed it. It's got Patrick Stewart in there. Sting. Yeah, everybody loves Sting. Anyways, it's a known quantity for the most part, right? Having read the first 240-ish pages, I can see why people would be sort of brought into this universe and why it would have the sort of legend around it that it does, the recognition around it that it does, the fandom that it has. It's definitely dated in some of its ideas and stylings, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just what it is. The book came out, and maybe it was the book that I was thinking about that came out like in the 60s and rather than the first movie. I'd have to look that up to be sure, which I'll try to do while I talk. But I mean, certainly at least at the very end of the section that I read, there was a weird, how to phrase this? There was a moment that seemed extremely homophobic. And I don't know if I was just inferencing something because that kind of awareness is on the tip of everybody's tongue these days. Us all, you know, slowly and begrudgingly becoming evolved humans. Or perhaps I'm absolutely right. And there was definitely homophobia put into a section at the end there. So, you know, it's old. It's an old story. It's an old book written by an old man who's no longer around. What are you going to do? These are the things that happen. People say that J.R.R. Tolkien was a raging anti-Semite, but what are you going to do at this point? Nothing you can do at this point, right? Except recognize that it happened. I don't know exactly what it is that I want out of this story yet. There's magic, maybe, but they try to explain it all with science, which is fine. It's a sci-fi book. It takes place on other planets. They have like force field shields. There are laser guns. But then at the same time, they fight with swords sometimes. And the Bene Gesserits, the people that Lady Jessica belongs to, is this, you know, sort of religious faction that's sort of an Illuminati, you know, parallel, people who are like pulling the strings, you know, a secret society sort of stuff. They seem to have magic. They can command people with their voice. It all seems to be very psychologically trained, like they could explain it away by saying that these people have a greater understanding of human psychology to the point where they're able to command people. And if that's what they're going to try to explain, then sure, fine. But they also sort of believe in their own fake religion, where Paul, our main character, Paul Atreides, is potentially like the Messiah character. I don't know. It's a little convoluted, and it doesn't help that we're constantly jumping in and out of other people's consciousness from one sentence to another. Even it's not even like we're changing in between reading sections. There's no page break that signals we're going into a different perspective. The perspective can change twice within the first paragraph of the first chapter, or, you know, the first page of a chapter. there's a lot happening, and it happens very quickly as far as perspectives go and as far as information dumping goes too. We spend a lot of time learning little pieces of backstory that are supposed to help educate us to be able to comprehend the next thing that's going to happen. We spend a lot of time hearing Paul go over training that he's had in his life, which would be why he's able to do the thing that he's about to do. Same thing with his mother, Lady Jessica, the Bene Gesserit. We spend a lot of time with her doing the exact same thing, you know, explaining in her head how she's going through her trainings that she's had for a long time, and maybe even remembering a specific instance in which she had to use it in the past. And now, as the reader, we are equipped to be able to believe what she is able to do next. And I hate that kind of thing, to be perfectly frank. It just sucks. I'm not really sure how else to say that, apart from ways that I've said it in the past on this show. You know, it's sort of distrustful of the reader to over-explain things. And, you know, I understand that maybe I'm speaking from a different perspective than any given person that just picks up a book off a shelf and says, yeah, I'll give this one a try. Obviously, I read almost nonstop. You know, I read and intake media even outside of this podcast, and we read at a blistering pace here. So my scope of experience on reading and writing and modes of storytelling is, on average, greater than the next person's. So maybe that's why I see it in this way. Maybe the next person doesn't care if something is being overexplained to them. Maybe they welcome it. I know, generally speaking, Jordan doesn't mind it at all. He loves having the additional details. And everybody can have their own reason for that. Continuing to speak to my impression of why Jordan likes that is because he really enjoys going off in his own mind about the different possibilities of a world and a universe, right? And if he's given the tools to be able to create those stories for himself, all the better. So he really enjoys when we get the info dump. And that's not why I always then, you know, argue with him about it, but that's what the argument is, right? He loves it. I usually don't. He sees the possibilities from it, whereas it seems to me like the author is just like, I can't trust the reader to understand what it is that I'm trying to say. And so I will take time out of the narrative to make sure that they can keep pace with me. And I resent that in most writing. Sometimes it's absolutely necessary, but we're telling a story, man. I'm not trying to go to school. That's the way that I look at it. And unfortunately, that seems to happen a lot in this book. Now, maybe it's just because we've gone through the first third-ish first. Really, it's more a little bit more than a third and very nearly getting to half of the book. And maybe it cools off at this point now that we've been introduced to what must be all the base components of the story, right? We understand about Spice, the drug that seems to make people superhuman, but then becomes inescapably addictive. We know about the Bene Gesserits and their abilities to understand and see and command from what I was talking about earlier seems to be a mostly psychological standpoint. We are aware of Mentats who use Spice to become human computers, basically. We are aware of an empirical structure to this universe and that there's layers of conspiracy happening and that there's this people that are looking for a savior potentially, but they've got secrets to hide as well. Like we at this point, it seems like we have all the bones of the story. Maybe we don't get the over-explanation after this point. I doubt that's the case, though. Most of the time, whenever that is the habit of someone presenting a story, it's just that, a habit, right? The story itself, though, the ideas that we have here are really interesting. The world itself, the universe, rather, is obviously more than just a singular world. Being in space is interesting. It's kind of run-of-the-mill future sci-fi thing. You know, it's spaceships, laser guns, force fields, a desert planet. You know, where have we seen that before? But nothing about it feels gimmicky. Maybe is the flip of that, what I was in, you know, trying to get to. I'm fine with these things being things I've seen before, certainly with it being an older book, right? You know, you want to keep in mind the same argument that you might have. I always bring it up because, you know, what else am I going to bring up? But for like a Lord of the Rings, that was the first one that did most of these things. Seems a bit played out if you've never read it or watched the movies before 2021. But that's because it is played out and it was the one that made the first move, you know. So trying to remember that while reading older books, I think, is kind of critical. Certainly if you are quick to judge, quick to criticize, as I often am, the characters so far are kind of neither here nor there. I don't really have too many emotions about any of them because I don't think I fully understand any of it just yet. I'm hoping that Jessica doesn't become a nothing character now that her main usefulness at this point seems obsolete, unless she just acts as a foil for Paul, which would be really disappointing. She was so capable and so pivotal to the movements of the story up until the point that he became God or whatever it is that happened, right? The sort of catalyst for the main story, Paul's father dying, Leto Atreides, the Duke Atreides, the Duke of Arrakeen, the desert planet that we live on now, or Arrakis. Arrakis is what it's called, I think. The Arrakeen people live on Arrakis. I'm guessing at these pronunciations. I didn't listen to the audiobook, and Jordan isn't here to tell me what the audiobook says. So it would be a bummer for Jessica to lose much character. Seems inevitable at this point. The catalyst for the Duke Atreides to die makes sense to happen right now, because obviously the story is about Paul and his journey, not about what the Atreides family does necessarily. It becomes pretty evident that he drops the Atreides name almost entirely, you know, even by the end of this section of the reading, it seems like. So it's not about that. It's about him and his journey. And probably in the last seconds of this section of reading, we do get sort of a glimpse into what he thinks the future is going to be, or what he knows it's going to be, rather, because he's God now or whatever. And it's that he's a seed. So he's supposed to turn humanity away from its entire history of what the book describes as jihad. And that being how humanity has always progressed. He's supposed to change that, right? And he's going to do that by saving Arrakis and the Fremen people. And I don't know what it's going to take for all of that to happen. There's 6 books in the core series. I don't know if Frank Herbert, the author, wrote all 6 of them. I think he wrote most of them, and then his son took over, was what I thought that I had heard, in a sort of Christopher Tolkien-esque way, where he went through his father's study, put all the notes together, and made some kind of cohesive narrative. Although I've heard that the ones that Frank Herbert's son put together were lesser than the ones that he did, and perhaps not as adept an adaptation of his father's notes as maybe Christopher Tolkien did. But that's, you know, that's just the opinion of other people, a couple of other people that I've talked to. Who knows if that's the case? Maybe at some point I'll get there and find out for myself. But if the core series is 6 books, man, that's a lot of space for whatever it is that's going to happen. And I guess the salvation of humankind across the stars is kind of a big event, right? But I just don't know how complicated they're going to have to make that to make it last 6 books. And that is what is concerning to me. 6 books is a really a large amount of pages. Even if they were all only 300 pages, you know, your typical novel size for something straightforward and mainstream, that's still 3x6, that's 1800 pages. That's a lot of time. A lot of what was wrong with the Kingkiller Chronicles, in my opinion, was the amount of time. Those were very long books, and I didn't think that they needed to be. Though maybe they do, because I still don't know what that story is about either. And maybe I don't know what this story is about. Maybe the salvation of Arrakis is just the beginning. And according to Paul's own words at the end there, maybe the seed of saving humanity across the stars. But I mean, he's going to go to every planet and do it over and over again. No, I mean, it's obviously going to have to take longer strides at some point. But I just feel like there's always going to be another complication, right? The next book is going to introduce a whole new host of characters that we've never even heard of before, and that's a problem. And then the next book is going to do the same thing. And then suddenly we're going to realize the true depths of the Emperor's betrayal against Paul's father and how that's tied to some other thing that we never really knew about. I'm afraid that it's going to become complicated for the sake of being complicated. I spent a lot of time being kind of negative about the book. And I think that's just because I've just come off of reading the last section of it where I started to develop a couple of problems with it. So it's fresh on my mind. We'll take a break here to hear from a sponsor, and maybe I'll be a little bit more positive. So things that I find really positive about the book so far. It really does seem to have endless possibilities at this point. And I think maybe I feel that way because we spent so much time getting bogged down in the minutiae of why things are happening, how things are happening, what are the things that are happening, that now the next 5.5 books can potentially be anything, right? And that's exciting to think about. It could also mean that if it could be anything, then that means any combination of bad as well. But, you know, let's think that it could be any combination of good for the sake of not doing the same thing that I always do. And this is, you know, being a negative piece of shit. The next thing that I really like about the series so far is the imagery. And I think that maybe a lot of that is sort of put in my head by the trailers of the upcoming movie. It's a very modern look at what sci-fi can be like, you know. There's nothing particularly overly fancy or antiseptic about the look in the trailers that I've seen so far. Now, definitely perhaps I overlooked something because I don't really pay attention to trailers all that much anyways. And maybe I'm, you know, totally misspeaking, and there's a lot of pristine chapel rooms that have no dust in them and that sort of thing. You know, the sort of shit that you would see in the Star Wars prequels, a bunch of metal that looked like had never even been breathed on by another living being. That kind of, you know, cleanliness, as opposed to episodes 4, 5, and 6, where everything was blasted to hell, looked like people had been living there, you know. But the lived in aspect is what sort of showed to me in the trailers so far. At the very least, it wasn't all Kamino, the clone planet. So the imagery that I have in my head as I'm reading is really appealing. It's the sort of science fiction that I can believe in, you know. It's just more welcoming to me is what I'm getting at. I really enjoyed the pieces that were sort of like the courtly intrigue. Y'all know that I enjoy that sort of stuff. I've talked about it a million times before for different reasons. It was one of the best parts of Game of Thrones, in my opinion, until, you know, that whole thing fell apart. The bits at the dinner, you know, the banquet, the scene prior to the large event where everybody dies and we run into exile, you know, get sent into the desert. That scene, there was a lot of intrigue stuff happening, a lot of reading people at the table, a lot of fencing with words, the kind of typical shit, you know. I always enjoy that stuff. I eat that stuff up. I think it's fun. Hopefully, there's more of that in the future. The current situation would suggest that there won't be much of it, but it would be odd to me for that to happen the one time and be as enjoyable as it was and not totally flail around like some stories end up doing when they try to dip into that, for it to just not happen again. Obviously that could happen, but across 5.5 more books, surely it's going to happen a couple more times, right? So that's good. Looking forward to the possibility of that. And I mean, those are the only like pointedly positive things that I can come up with in this moment. It's difficult to know too much else what to say at this point. Because like I talked about in the beginning, not a whole lot has happened. We've just been set into the motion of the actual story at this point. And it took 240 pages to do so, which, you know, in a 6-book series is not that much. And so I guess I really don't have too much else to say about it. I'm trying to speculate about what's going to happen next. You know, I hit some broad strokes already about what seems is going to be the case, but we've got to find where the Freeman base is and discover what it is that this people is about, you know, get Paul entrenched into his messianic role amongst them. And you know, what does that mean for the continuation of the story? Do other characters get pulled in? When do we get the Zendaya character, right? Who is it that she plays and how quickly does she jump into the story? The movie is only supposed to be like half of the book, I think. That's what I had seen. Somebody had been talking to the director or people involved, and they said that they really were going for a second movie and that they were going to make this first movie a part one, and they were going to try and stick by that because they really believed in making it a 2-movie project, and they just were going to pray that they got enough funding to do so from the first one. And so if that is the case, and we know that Zendaya is in the first movie, then we know that she's that character, whatever, whoever that character is, comes up pretty quick. Does Paul completely assimilate to becoming a Freeman? Probably. What happens to his mom, the lady Jessica? I don't know. I feel like she's going to fall to the wayside, which kind of sucks. I don't know when we get to see the Baron again, Baron Harkonnen. Obviously, that's the bad guy name, right? That's one of the things that you hear just as in a matter of proximity to anybody that knows about this story. Just like you might know about Gandalf, even if you haven't read Lord of the Rings. Like, people know about these things, right? It permeates the culture. So the Baron Harkonnen, when do we see him again? When does he matter again? Might not matter for the rest of this book, which would make sense on a galactic scale. But just like other galactic scale media, sometimes we spend too much time with one family. We'll see what happens there, right? We're missing a couple of other main characters that we know about. We're missing Hawat, the Mentat that was under the Atreides employ. We're missing Halleck Gurney, another person that worked for the Atreides. You know, and they'll probably just show up. They'll have been with the resistance fighters, you know, the remaining Atreides people that are fighting the Harkonnens, or they'll already be at the Freeman camp by some lucky twist of fate, that sort of stuff. I mean, if the plot of this series stretches out to an appropriate length, then I would say that this book doesn't end with them leaving the planet. I would think that they still have at least another half book on this planet to really enact whatever great change is going to happen. But I might be expecting too much there. Maybe we move right along. And maybe that's for the best. I don't know. We haven't got there, right? I am hoping that we spend a lot of time doing it right, whatever it is. And I'm hoping that we spend a lot of time learning more about this planet, learning more about the interesting parts of it, and that maybe this story isn't as huge as it sort of seems like it's going to be right now. I think I'm tired of the huge story. I think that that's something that too much media tries to do these days and ultimately almost always fails at. Maybe that's just my own opinion of it, right? Maybe I'm totally off base there, but I think I'm tired of the big story. I'm hoping that there's more little story in this than big story, and that the big story can take its time because we're going through the little story. And that's what I'm hoping for at this point. We'll see, I suppose. You'll keep hearing from me week after week at this point. We've really only got 2 more weeks of Dune content, not counting the Monday episode that will follow the movie. But we've got 2 more weeks of reading to finish out Dune, the novel, not the subbook, the first in the 6-part series, Dune. In that same week that the last episode, episode 3 of Dune, the book comes out, the movie comes out on that Friday, the 22nd, October 22nd. Mark your calendars, buy your tickets. I got an email from Alamo Drafthouse today saying that the tickets are now available, so they're out there. We'll see the movie and hopefully have an episode ready for that Monday. There's a real possibility that we won't, but that's what we're shooting for right now. We'll see what happens, right? So once that is over, what we were thinking about maybe doing is putting the show more into seasons, which is a more popular thing amongst internet content these days, instead of just making things indefinitely for the most part. People take breaks and take time to get into pre-production for shows and get them banked up, and then release schedules can be reliable and, you know, just things that make sense from an actual production standpoint. And so we're thinking about maybe adopting some of those practices. And so after Dune, we might not have any episodes for months. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll see what we can think we can come up with. But we're going to get through Dune, and I think we're going to enjoy it. And I hope that y'all enjoy it, too. I know a lot of people that are reading the book for the first time in anticipation of the movie. And I don't think any of them listen to this show. They're just people that I talk to and coincidentally are doing so and have brought it up to me like, hey, are you going to get excited for the movie? Are you going to read the book? And, you know, so people are excited. And I hope that everybody is, because it looks like it'll be fun. And the book so far is good. I haven't begrudgingly picked it up at any point, which is something that I've done in the past. Not as excited as I was with Six Crimson Cranes, like I most recently spoke about, but I've been ready to read every time. And I'm excited to see whatever it is that happens next with it, if only because of the weight that it carries as a property. You know, it's something that I always wanted to read at some point, knowing the gravity that it had, and just always felt like maybe I'll never get to it because it's too much of a task. And now that I have the excuse, here we are, and I'm glad for it. So let's see what happens. I hope y'all are enjoying it too. In any case, you know where to find us. At ears_stamps on Twitter and Instagram, and dogearsandtimestamps@gmail.com is our email if you wish to send us anything there. You can also go to anchor.fm/ears-stamps. That's where the show itself is hosted and filtered out to all the podcast providers. There's also means of supporting directly there if you so wish. That's about it, huh? I'll see y'all next week. I'm Will Hedrick, and this is Dog Ears and Timestamps.